So, depending on how you celebrate Christmas, we have 9 or 10 days left to prepare for this great day of family, of friends, of feast, of celebration, and certainly of love. Love is everything, and love is celebrated in this wonderful way on this great time of Christmas. So I'm going to ask you, if you would, just take a moment, maybe a little chat with each other. And you who are in live stream, talk to whoever's next to you. Or if you're alone, just sit and wait. But I'd like you to ask yourself, what's the one thing that you still yet need to do? I know you got lots of things, but what's the one thing that you really still need to do between now and Christmas morning? Take a little chat. To celebrate your birthday. So, folks, I see some smiles. I see some people looking at me. I even saw a hug. So that's good. That's great. So let's take a little meandering through those three readings tonight and see what we can discover, what we can come up with in our own journey. Isaiah. Most would say that this section of Isaiah was not written as it seems. It sounds like they just got back from Babylon, from the great captivity. And they're rejoicing, or at least they're being promised of being rejoicing. But in fact, most likely, most suggest that it was actually written a couple of years after they returned. And what they found when they returned was that it wasn't very pretty. Jerusalem was in disarray. The temple was all beat up. Their homes were, they were in bad shape. And so there was a temptation on the part of the Jews to say, even though it was tough and even though we were in captivity, it might be good if we got back, even to our captivity in Babylon. And Isaiah goes right after them and says to them, yes, you didn't come back to a rose garden, but in fact, you are God's chosen people. You have a claim on this, your people, your land, your temple, your families, your home. This is yours. And you have a promise. You have a promise that you will find, ultimately and finally, great joy and great peace. So even though it's a tough time, even though there are many, many difficulties, the reality of it is God has made a promise to you. And even though you've been unfaithful, God will always, always be faithful to his people. So that's that first reflection tonight. I don't know what you make of it, what it means to you. But, you know, for lots of people, Christmas is not exactly the happiest time of the year. For lots of us, we celebrate and we love it and we relish it. But for lots of folks, it's a very difficult time. It's a trying time. It's a time of some kind of anxiety. And, you know, there's all kinds of things in the air, even suicide. So it's a difficult time for lots. So we need to be people of the promise. We need to say to people that even though things are difficult. Our God is faithful. He's faithful to each one of us, no matter what our life circumstance. And so this is really not a bad reading as we continue our journey of Advent, 9, 10 days before Christmas. The letter now from St. James is a different kind of thing. He's talking about a belief in the early church. The early church, the early Christians, really believed that this second coming, this thing that Christ described, would happen soon. They figured soon after the resurrection, sometime very soon, Christ would come again. There would be this, what they call a second coming. But James, because he lived after the time of Paul, and Paul was the great advocate, even though he had lived a few years after that, they were beginning to say, where is he? You know, where is this second coming? Where is this promised? So James goes after something that's pretty important in the early church. He's saying, while we don't know when Christ will come again, you and I don't know when we will see our God face to face. We have no idea of when our time and our call is. Yet, that's not the issue. The issue isn't when. The issue is how we live our lives. If we're faithful, if we're true, if we're trying to live with integrity, if we live for the other, if our life is not just about us, then it doesn't really matter when Christ comes, because we're ready. We're ready because we're faithful. We're ready because we're following Jesus Christ. We're ready because we believe in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So that's what James is saying in that second reading today, confronting the big issue of his time. And then the gospel. Now this is, I love it. And I owe so much to Jerome Murphy O'Connor, who, by the way, just died about a month ago in the École Biblique. I didn't know that. He was a dear friend, and he would come here in June and often give lectures to us. This incredible man. He has this great insight about Paul. I probably am not doing good service to what he says. And now that he's in heaven, he knows what I'm saying. When he was in Jerusalem, it didn't matter because he didn't know what I was saying about him. But I think what he would say was this. John the Baptist, he had a very rigid and tough message. What did you go out to the desert to see? You didn't go out to see a wimp. You didn't go out to see a guy who was just saying, you're wonderful, you're wonderful. He called people a brood of vipers. He said that our lives were not faithful. He said people who were in the temple praying and lifting their hands to God were a bunch of phonies. And he was this powerful voice, and he demanded the strict observance. And many say he came out of that Essene community where the great issue of bathing and the great issue of a recovery of that very pure way to come to know Yahweh was so apparent. But he also had this idea, I think, from what I can gather from O'Connor, that the Messiah wasn't like this Messiah. His belief was that the Messiah was this person who would come and save Israel, would uplift the Romans who had taken hold of their nation, and that he would, with a mighty force, an armed force, take the enemy and change the circumstance of these Jews so that they could once again live in freedom. So, while he's in prison, he hears about this guy who claims to be the Messiah. But it isn't the Messiah that he thought or knew. So he sends to his cousin the message, are you the Christ? Or should we be looking for somebody else? In other words, you better shape up, brother, because if you're not who I think you should be, then you better quit saying who you think you are. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? Okay, that was a bunch of words, but there it is. I mean, I'm putting words in John's mouth. Shouldn't do that. But what does Jesus say? He says, tell John he's got the wrong view. He really has the wrong view of what a Messiah is. Tell him this. Tell him the lame will walk. They walk. Tell him people who are blind, see. Telling people who are separated, distanced, untouchable by every standard of the human Jewish tradition, embraced, held, cured, and loved. And tell them the poor have the good news preached to them. So he's saying, and then he says at the end of that, please forgive anyone who's scandalized by that. Sorry that I'm not what you think I should be. But that's who I am. And that's who my Father has shown me to be. How about that? That's the Messiah. So, what we have is this give and take, this coming to an understanding. And then Jesus says, who did you go out to see? So while he disagrees with his cousin, he supports him. You went out to see someone who was a man of his convictions, not some guy swayed by the winds. You went out to see a man who spoke truth to you. You went out to see this great John. So what does that mean? On this third Sunday of Advent. Well, I'm not sure. Could mean lots of things. But for me, this is what it means. Have you read it yet? Anybody got the copy? Start subscribing to Time, will you? You'll get it early. Excuse me, Man of the year, excuse me, person of the year, Francis. I was thinking about that. Read his story this morning. It actually brought me to tears. It is just amazing when over 9 months, because you forget about the things that he said, but when they gather them all together cumulatively and put them in a form. And then one of the other authors, a beautiful woman's descriptive of why they chose him to be the person of the year. Folks, if you remember, literally a year ago today, we didn't know who in the blazes Cardinal Bergoglio was than the man in the moon. No one knew him. And as a matter of fact, in this magazine, it says he was really wearing down. He was getting tired. He had literally sent his letter of resignation into Benedict, sent it in. He had chosen a place where he was going to live in retirement. He was in a home for elderly folks. That's where he was going to go. And whammo, Benedict resigns. He's placed on the world stage, and the people of Argentina said, when he came out that day out onto the balcony, you know, for the first time, they said, that's the guy that we knew years ago. The fire was back. It's amazing. So what is he saying? He's saying to us, I think, a whole variety of things about institution. And that's important for us. He takes on the issue of the child abuse. Took on the issue of the banks. He's now taking on the issue of the Curia. You talk about somebody that's in trouble. I'd say poor Cardinal Bergoglio is getting fried by lots of folks. Because those are the issues. But he's taking them on just in these months. But my question, what is he saying to me? Not just to the church. What's he saying to you? What is he saying? Especially in this time. Well, let me tell you. I was in St. Louis, had a great time in St. Louis. We had a fabulous wedding. It was beautiful. Made some new friends. They're here at Mass tonight. How about that? Our church is continuing to grow. I got back about noon, went over to the auditorium. And we have St. Joseph Center. They work with about 1,300 to 1,400 families during this time of the year. I'm telling you, St. Joseph Center is doing incredible work. So we have a Christmas party just before they get this adoptive family and the gifts and all the things that are happening. It's a wonderful day at St. Monica's, and the kids are there and all that. And I enjoy that. I enjoy meeting with them and hugging their little kids, and then Santa is there and all. But I happened on a young couple. How many months ago did I marry you two? 3 months ago. Did I take you to Froman's? Good. All right. So most couples I take to Froman's restaurant before they get married. Just a little bit. You know, go from Froman's, best Jewish deli in Santa Monica, right to St. Monica's Church. It's a great combination. And I just chat with them and talk to them, try to find out a little bit about their lives. And so this couple heard something I say to every couple, so I'm sorry to say you weren't, I mean, you're special, but you weren't that special. Because I say to every couple, for goodness sakes, I know you're in love. Love is in the air. Love is everything. And you'll be filled with all of that joy in that day. But for goodness sakes, turn around. Look right outside that door. Look in our park. And see that you too will be a new force. A new force of love to change this world. So don't just be staring at each other. Look out. Try to change this world. Make it a little better. And there you were. I said, I married 100 couples this year, but you, thank God, one couple came back. And there you were. You came the night before, you decorated our auditorium, and you served those people. How about that? So I hope, in some little way, that as we attend to this great season, we take the opportunity to hear that first word of Isaiah clearly saying, if you're in trouble, if life is difficult, then please remember that God is with you. And we need, you and I need to speak that, especially to people who struggle in this season. We're all awaiting the coming of the Lord, all of us. Christmas Day, at a time of our life, at the end of our lives. We never know. We can prepare by doing our best. And I think more than anything tonight, those words of Jesus, go back and tell John, the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf hear, the poor have the gospel preached to us. And my brothers and sisters, we are living in a time, I tell you, it took me by surprise. I never thought I would see it. This extraordinary time with Francis. One last thought, and I hope it isn't self-serving or you're not thinking that I'm just saying, look at me, because people criticize me for talking about myself, but I can't talk about what you tell me because I'm sworn to secrecy. So I'm sorry. So all I got to talk about is the things I know. I am, otherwise you wouldn't want to talk to me if I blabbed. So I don't. But one of the things that have always struck me is a family, the Alan Young family. Every Christmas Eve, they're not Catholic, but they come to St. Monica's. They love the smells, the bells, you know, it's Christmas Eve. And we get a lot of folks coming from all over the place on Christmas Eve. And if they're in your seat on that day, forget about it. Hug them and kiss them and tell them you're welcome. Okay. So, they come every year. But every year at midnight, they say, we just went out into the streets of Santa Monica. And this year, we gave away whatever we gave away, especially to the women who are out in the cold of Christmas Eve night. And I've always said to them, God, that's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. And then I always say, remember now, I had the 4 o'clock, I had the 9 o'clock, and I had midnight. I haven't got time for that. I'm not going to do that this year. After the 9 o'clock mass, I'm going to go out with them. I want to go out with them. So there's this guy in Rome, who, by the way, this Tuesday is 77 years of age, is teaching an old pastor right in Santa Monica. to go out and touch those people. That's our Messiah. That's Christmas. That's why he came. I hope these days, these 9 or 10 days, are good. Now, I like you. I was at Macy's on Wednesday for the one-day sale. I was there. So I'm not pure. I'm not pure. I'm not better than you are. I was there. And I actually spent less than I saved. So I felt terrific when I walked out. But there's more. There is so much more.